This weekend I'll be in my
She came in the car. That's the first
one. I know she was talking to Megan here, so let's just take her advice to her. I got this morning.
Hello, do we have anybody online?
My daughter is crying.
Hello?
Someone.
Pat?
Yes. Hi, Scott.
Yep, I'm online.
Great.
Hey.
Okay.
Yeah, hey, Scott. Rangy.
They're almost ready to start.
But the applicants, will she drive with us? Yes, you sure.
So, you know, I can't imagine a great woman when I know she's sitting there in front of her.
It's like it's just a license.
The good thing is she can't afford to get So there wasn't an issue there. She's like, I have no money for gas. But I think it's a pretty good thing. Can I be there?
My neighbor, or my neighbors, I have no idea.
Thank you for getting here. Especially when you're married on the beach.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good morning, Ali.
How are you?
Well, good morning. I'm the... I was described as well. She was.
Good morning. I want to call to order this 54th meeting of the New Jersey Highland Water Protection and Planning Council. My name is John Weingard. I live in Surgeonsville in Hunterdon County.
Janice Kovach, Town of Clinton, Hunterdon County.
Tracy Carluccio, Public Representative, Hunterdon County.
Mimi Letts, Persephone, Morris County.
Elizabeth Fallop, Race Bergen County, Freeholder.
Tim Dillingham, I'm a public member of the Mercer County.
Eric Peterson, Hunterdon County, Freeholder.
And on the phone?
Scott Whitenack from Morristown.
Okay. We do have a quorum. This meeting was advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. Also publicized on the Council's website. All who wish, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have minutes from the last meeting from September 6th, and we have agreed, I think, that members can vote to approve the minutes even if they weren't at this meeting, if they're comfortable doing so. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to make a comment that I left before the meeting was over. And that didn't mean,
Okay, probably should include that. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. So that's one change. Other comments from council members to the minutes changes? Public, yes.
My name is David Shope, and you seem to have an ongoing problem characterizing what I say as far as the minutes are concerned. Let's see if I can. So let me see if I can clarify it. What I said, I did not say the cities are entitled to the water. I said the cities take the water essentially as a colonizing power would take from the colony. We are the colony. By act of a corrupt government in Trenton, they allocate the water to authorities like the Water Supply Authority, who sell it at cost to primarily private purveyors who mark it up. In the case of the Water Supply Authority, they sell it for $228 a million gallons. That is 200 tractor trailer loads worth of water. That's what a million gallons of water would look like. New Jersey American Water retails it to residential customers for $5,072. I've said it before, I've said it again. Maybe you'll get it right this time. The tax receipts I discussed, gross receipts and excise tax, the number is $58 million just from New Jersey American Water alone. This money goes to Trenton, where they are free to squander it as they see fit. The issue of soil types remains open to me. I don't see why soil types should make no difference when it comes to your charge under the Act that discusses agricultural viability. Soil types obviously have a lot to do with agricultural viability. Recognize the fact and deal with it. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll make those corrections. Any other comments about the minutes?
The Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. The New Jersey Highlands Coalition, subsequent to the meeting, submitted comments. I just wanted to make sure that they made part of the record. I didn't know how you were planning to do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't believe they were submitted at the meeting. They were subsequent to, so can we make them a part of the record for this meeting?
Would that be okay? Fine, if that's okay with
you.
Yes. The minutes have never been so popular.
Okay.
Helen Heinrich, New Jersey Farm Bureau. In my comments, the farmers should know the protection of prime farmland will be an assumption in the plan. I don't believe I said that, so if you could just scratch that in the minutes. Other than that, I'm glad to see that my other questions are pretty well reflected. I also submitted comments on Friday, so I hope that they will be attached to today's minutes.
Those were sent to the whole council.
Here. Great, okay.
Thank you. Okay. With those changes made, any other comments to council members on minutes? All in favor of approving the minutes as amended?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. And so since we did the roll call just a couple minutes ago, we've been joined by Jack Schreier, Keisha Way, and Bill Cogger, and Mr. Ortiz. Scott Whitenack's on the phone. I don't think anyone, is anyone else on the phone?
Yeah.
Immediately after this meeting, or with a short break, and then after this meeting, the Natural Resources Committee will be meeting in this room, and the materials for that meeting are on the table, reception table. They're available to the public who would like to see them before the meeting, as well as during the meeting, and the materials for this meeting that we'll be discussing, some of them are on the table, and some of them will be handed out as we get to them. The next meeting of the council after this is in 2 weeks, October 4th at 10 o'clock. Any reports from council members? Executive Director's report, Abby?
Thank you and good morning. Just to bring you up to date on what the staff has been doing since we last met, we continue to work obviously on the next generation regional master plan, and to and fro with the work between ourselves and our consultant, Simon Larson. Also just want to assist you in realising that we're not just working on the issue that comes before the council for the meeting, for the matters of for discussion at that particular meeting. We're constantly going back over issues that we've worked on, so the policy issues that we talked about 2 weeks ago, we continue to work and refine those, taking in again into consideration the comments that we received from council members and members of the public at that meeting and comments that are subsequently sent to the office. Likewise, we have been working on the issues before you today, the vision statement, when we talk about that. And we also are working ahead on what we'll be discussing at subsequent meetings. And this type of approach will continue to move forward. So when people ask me, council members have said, can I send in comments, more comments if they occur? The answer always is yes, up until the bitter end. We probably ask that you don't send anything on the last day. But up until that, we're prepared to work and to keep working and back and forth again with Charlie Seaman's offices to make sure that he's up to date as well on everything that we're receiving in the office. We've been working on various issues besides those topics, the normal day-to-day work of the office. We have a preparation of the budget for fiscal year 2008, which was discussed yesterday at the Budget and Finance Committee, and the chair of that committee, Bill Carter, will speak to you about that. We continue to work on WQMP amendments, and that will be the topic of discussion this afternoon with the Natural Resources Committee. Also, we've been having ongoing meetings with the Department of Environmental Protection to make sure that as we move forward on these kind of amendments and any of the other kind of work that we do with them that requires interagency coordination, we've been meeting with them to see how that will work out, what the duties of each office are and how we can assist each other and make the process as efficient as possible for the applicants, for ourselves, and to make sure that we do due diligence by the mandate of the Act. We have also on your agenda today some resolutions for your consideration, and one of those would be a contract for grant with the Town of Lepatcong for TDR receiving feasibility grant, and the chair of the TDR committee will speak to you on that issue. We continue to work on the lands model, and I will tell you we're testing the model constantly, looking back at the 51 indicators that we had for the LUCM model
and working forward on the inclusion of the new indicators and the overlay zones that we discussed with you 2 weeks ago. That work is progressing very well. The GIS team working with the planning and science teams have been doing great work on that. And just to confirm one thing, there was concern, and certainly I got it at some of the outreach meetings, you know, if we change the methodology at all, do we lose the benefit of those indicators that were worked on? And the answer absolutely is no, because however the lands model ends up in being refined, that information is going to be critical for us, the information from those 51 indicators, and we will continue to use that information and more information as we go through conformance. Because, you know, all of that mapping is of value to us, all of that data collection and analysis is of value to us and should be of value to the municipalities that we work with. We've continued to have interviews with candidates, possible candidates, you know, to add to the staff so that we can bring ourselves up to the full 25 full-time positions. So just letting you know that that work is ongoing as well. We also continued to have our outreach meetings. I will tell you that we're trying to make sure that the staff are focused on the tasks and priorities at hand to make sure that we keep to the aggressive schedule, very aggressive schedule, that we set forth. But we do realize the importance of continual work with our partners in this, and those being the counties and the municipalities. Therefore, when we're asked to be out there and spreading the word, answering questions, we are there. To give you an idea of what we've been doing in the past couple of weeks, staff attended the Regional Plan Association's Highlands Mayors Institute. That was very interesting. Mayors from Washington Township and Borough were there, Mount Arlington, Chester Borough, Oakland Borough, and Boonton Borough. All of those municipalities were represented. And then we had great interagency cooperation. The Office of Smart Growth was there, Department of Transportation. I'm sure I'll forget some of the other agencies that were represented, but we all worked together on sort of a project-by-project basis at the request of those particular municipalities. And it's a great exercise in looking at what planning can be done to assist them in meeting their goals, and having that kind of, the RPA brings a slew of professionals to the table, and then we were able to talk about the conformance process, and you know, each time we talk to these municipalities, helping them to understand that they are mandated to work with us in the areas that are within the preservation area. So most of those communities will be working with us anyway, so it's a great opportunity to look holistically at their town and study the benefits of working with us for their whole town. At the same time, those towns that fall just within the planning area that have an option to work with us, we'd certainly like to encourage them to consider that and know that we're a resource already, that we're willing to work with them and want to work with them, that we have a lot of data to share with them, whether or not they work with us. That data is valuable to them. But we want to create these kind of partnerships so that they will hopefully reach out to us. And we'll continue to outreach them as well so that we can bring them into that conformance process. On Saturday, September the 15th, staff attended the Sussex County Luscroft Farm event with Council Member Glenn Vitrano. Again, a great opportunity to meet the people up in Sussex County, to be present at a wonderful event that was celebrating the preservation of this parcel, but and talking about the ongoing restoration, which was important for many reasons: agricultural viability, tourism, a historic building. So great opportunities for staff to be represented to talk to people and show where the Highlands fits in. And of course, the questions then with municipalities always come back to conformance and the possibilities of working with us. There were other county reps there as well who had questions on projects at a county-wide level. September 16th, the Upper Raritan Watershed Association had an event in Tewkesbury, and we were there as well to speak again about the work we're doing, share information, answer questions, and use that again as another opportunity to talk about the opportunity to plan conformance with Tewkesbury. September 17th, meeting with Bloomingdale Township to meet with their town officials to discuss certain issues that they wanted us to assist them with. September 19th, Roxbury Township, Thatcott Council, I apologise. We have met with them, though, I think three times in the past, and because we wanted to make sure that we could
have a meaningful meeting and, you know, be able to respond to some of the questions. We also felt that some of the work we're doing at the moment would best answer their questions if we completed the work. So we're setting up another meeting with them. State and federal agency coordination, a meeting with DEP that I spoke of earlier, and another meeting with the Pinelands, because a lot of the work we do is similar to theirs, and we have systems in place here, the HCIS system, which is the system by which we take in information, and we'll be using that automated system to link to our GIS mapping and to work in the future with all applications. So we had a group from the administration end of this office went down to have a look at their systems, to meet with their staff, and we'll be continuing to have those meetings with science planning and GIS units as well to make sure that we can best utilize that system. Stakeholder coordination, Huntsman County Green Table had a meeting last Thursday morning, and it was termed Highlands Nuts and Bolts. So we were down there talking again about the issues and the progress of the Highlands Regional Master Plan, and also again the question they were asking was about conformance in particular, so we were able to speak to them on those issues. And yesterday a meeting with the New Jersey Highlands Coalition, their policy board met, and they had asked us to attend, and we represented there, and we have a more upcoming meetings that I'll speak about at the next meeting. Also, I wanted to talk to you a little today about the ongoing work on exemptions, something that's critical. If we're to plan for the future, we have to know where we are today. And so an analysis of the exemptions, their effect on the Highlands, on the landscape, and what we can do in the future to plan for those exemptions. What I'd like to do is, and I've spoken to the chair about this, is discuss that in more detail after we've had the discussion on the vision statement.
Question? Okay. Committee reports. Personnel committee met this morning, and as Eileen made reference to, discuss the staff's efforts to fill the 6 vacant positions on staff, and they have candidates within the next day or so. They'll be down to 6 candidates for those 6 positions that we'll be recommending to try to get approval of the necessary approvals from Trenton so that they can be hired and then start work with a target date of October 15th. So by then, we would have the full complement of staff that we are allotted, we will probably need additional staff in the future. We'll try to get approval to do that, but we would be at our full complement at that point. And so the staff went over with the committee some really interesting, exciting-looking candidates. Optimistic that will move forward quickly. The other 2 committee reports each lend themselves to, there's no follow-up action on the personnel committee, but there is for the other committee, so why don't we do those together? Start with the Budget and Finance Committee and our new treasurer and new chairman of that committee, Bill Cocker.
And I wish to thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
It's a lesson, never miss a meeting. We had the budget committee meeting yesterday, and we talked about a number of things. I think the most important of which is moving forward in terms of analyzing where we are and where we're headed, and the selection of a consultant to come in and, somebody more than a consultant, somebody actually do some work in terms of the finance area, Gregory
Delapia.
Who has 10 years' experience in government finance matters and looks to be an excellent candidate, and to help us get set up with some statements of accounts and to organize and use a software package that we can report out. I think what's happened since the beginning is we started small and intimate. We had a very good control over the amount of monies that were coming in, and as we've grown, we need a little bit more focus on the nuts and bolts and details, and having Gregory come in will be great. And working also with Ranji and staff here will get us some relevant reports. Also want to change a little bit of the format and how we look at it. It's my intent to review the budget formally on a quarterly basis and to look at all the deltas between expenditures and what we had last year to see where we are, just to take a pulse, so that we know going forward if we're going to be short of funds or if we need funds. We also have the FY08 budget that we went through. I'd be happy. I know the members have in their packet a memo detailing the high points or low points, or whatever you want to look at it, of the budget. And we can comment about any particular line items if anybody has a question. But in my looking at it and viewing it, the bottom line is about a 7%, a little bit more increase. It seems to be reasonable. The categories have moved back and forth because of changes in particular areas, so I didn't find anything extraordinarily strange, and I think going forward we'll have a little bit more detail right down to, you know, the actual expenditures themselves. So I'd like to, you know, recommend that we hire Gregory
Delapia,
I'll get that, and to adopt the FY08 budget.
You want to make one of those as a motion? We'll do one at a time.
Okay.
We'll do a budget first.
I'll make a motion to accept the budget.
Second.
FY08.
Right. Do you have a second, sir? Any comments or questions?
I have a question. Could you very briefly tell us where the 7% increase is focused?
Well, it's really kind of across the board. If you look at it, you'll see, for example, we had a significant reduction in part-timers coming in, and we've had an increase in full-timers going forward. So in the mix of change is really where it is. There's no particular item that I see that that really bubbles out in my mind. You can look at things as, you know, water machines, you know, small items. It's not anything in particular that I see that's come. Of course, we have added the finance person and an auditor into the budget, so that's added about $35,000 or $40,000. But not anything in particular that I can point my finger to.
We'll also have the 25 staff will be a higher cost than
absolutely
19 or so.
Right. But also, on the other hand, you're saving almost $45,000 in part-timers.
Right.
So, you know, you have some offsets in the budget, and there's been some movement, particularly in MIS. There was a movement from one area to another. Looks like a big increase unless you look at the fact that you've decreased to zero in another category. I think once we have a better statement of accounts that we can look at and we can compare in a generic sense, we'll know better where our ups are. It's very confusing to do it just on a top-down basis.
Do we have any surplus from this year's budget?
Yes, we carried over $322,276.48.
Any public comments?
What is the budget? I just have the resolution. I don't see a single dollar sign.
We can make copies of the summary sheet. Total expenditures and revenues, $2,822,276.48.
I'd like a copy.
Certainly.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay.
Second one is to appoint Gregory Pia, or we're going to call him our finance.
Contract for financial services.
Contract for financial services.
Is this the resolution?
This is the resolution, yes. So Bill's moving the resolution that is labeled approval of contract for financial services.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
What time period is this contract covering?
It's a year contract, not to exceed $25,000, but it's on a work and time basis.
Okay,
so
it's commencing.
Commencing is if you take the action, then we'll set up a time for him to start. So I would say in the next couple of weeks.
And we're looking for at least 5 hours a week in-house here. It's not a contract where they're going to be reviewing from far. It will be in the building.
Okay. And who will he be reporting to when he's here?
He'll be reporting to myself and Tom.
Comments on the resolution? Public comment? Yes.
What municipal work has he done?
I'll give you that, actually.
We were also looking for someone who had experience at the state level.
Right. He's worked for the township of Knowlton, Millstone, Greenwich, Hardwick, as CFOs. He's a CPA. He was the director of revenue and finance for Irvington. He worked for the Irvington Board of Ed, also the Essex County Vocational Technical Schools. I was acting township administrator. So he's a very strong, you know, public, that's what we were looking for, somebody who had some public experience.
All those in favor of the resolution?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Abstain.
Okay. Let me welcome Greg Petrano and Kurt Alsop, who joined recently, and Scott Whitenack is on the phone, and here we are. Next committee is the TDR committee. Scott?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, John. The town that's coming forward is Lopakon in Warren County. They're a split town, approximately one-third in the preservation, two-thirds in planning. They're interested in using the TDR program to possibly enable them to grow. They seem to have, apparently they have some sewer and some water capacity. They have a greenfield site that they're interested in doing some planning on. So they came forward and asked us, I believe it was in May, they showed some interest in seeking this grant for $24,500. Our next meeting of the TDR committee is October 11th. We have been really trying hard to fit in a committee meeting sometime sooner, but with everything else going on, it seemed like that was the first opportunity we'd have. So Tom Borden and Jeff LaJava figured that if we could get this information out to the committee members, if anyone made comments and came back, we'd address it at that point. But I believe that no one did. So thus, I'm comfortable in just moving this forward to the full council and recommending that it be approved, the resolution that's in our package be approved for this little pack on application.
So are you making that as a motion?
I'll make it a motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
And this would be the first grant we've given under this program, for transfer development rights specifically. Comments? Questions for Scott? Any public comments on this resolution? Okay. We have the resolution in our packets. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. We have now gone through 11 of the items on the agenda. We will not keep this pace going. So we turn now to item 12, the discussion of the vision statement for the regional master plan. Members of council, we all received this a week ago Monday. I would note this right on the schedule that we had been promised that we would get this 10 days, at least 10 days in advance, and we did. A number of members of council individually sent in comments, and the staff revised the vision statement this week and sent that, although I'm not sure everybody got it, but sent it out yesterday, or when was it?
Yesterday morning.
So in any case, the copy we should be talking from, what does it say at the top? Did you have it has yesterday's date, I think? Or?
It says draft for consideration at the September 2nd meeting.
The 20th. Okay. The 20th. Is it in the early draft says something different as well?
It didn't have that.
It didn't have that, okay. Okay, so the copy you should be looking at as we have the discussion is that it says at the top draft for consideration at the September 20, 2007 meeting of the Highlands Council. Anyone doesn't have that, raise your hand and staff will get it.
It does say draft.
It does say draft. Yes. All right. Eileen, we'll send this to you and to Charlie Seaman.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'd like to start by just reminding you of the process that we're working on. We're targeted to produce a complete next generation plan on November 19th. And we suggested to the chair and presented to you all that we should have interim workshops in which we would provide information as a means of giving you an understanding of where we're headed and get your feedback. It's important that I explain to you that when we delivered this document to you on Monday, a week ago or whenever it was, nobody stopped working. We're working right now on goals, policies, and objectives, which you're going to get next Monday. We're also working on programs. And every piece of work we do feeds back to the draft we've already given you. We can only meet this deadline if we work at that pace. So I hope you'll understand that what we're giving you are works in progress. They're all works in progress until November 19th, when we'll produce this document. And they will start maturing. You'll start seeing more consistent matters. And so in some ways, I apologize that we have a document today that's different from what you reviewed a week ago, but it's important. It's essential, if we're going to meet the deadline, that we work at this pace. And so we appreciate your patience and understanding. We'll try to do as good a job as we can of making sure we get it to you in time. But the primary objective is to let you know where we are and where we're going, so that when you get the full document, it won't be a new news. It will be refinement of old news. And it's also important to get your input. The vision document, the concept of a vision document, emerged in a whole series of conversations. Its primary origin is probably the public comments that said, what does this all mean? Not everybody who reviews a plan like this is a technician, is a professional planner, or somebody who holds office. There are a lot of public members, property owners, others that have to understand, appreciate, and ultimately believe in the instrument for it to be successful. Staff also, I think, in our talking through what could we do to better tell the story, concluded that we need a descriptive statement that would be not a highly technical document, which would summarize what it is we're trying to achieve here in the region. And this is what this document is intended to do. In the middle of it is a resource assessment, which is a work in progress. All it has is the broad policy characteristics right now. As we're working through the refinement of the land's capability model, the land capability map under the new lands model, and get towards the end of this, there'll be additional information that will be fed into that. But that's the document that's been distributed to you. And what I propose, because this is our first exercise of this type, that we go through it in sort of serial fashion. What I'd like to do is follow each of the major headings, point out what I think are really important concepts, and then answer any questions or get any feedback or comments that anybody has with regard to the document. And again, it would be, you have data and analysis at the front of the document, you have a vision statement that reflects many of the directions from the Highlands Act or define what that vision will be, then the goals, policies, and objectives that will follow it, then the specific programs that will implement the goals, policies, and objectives, and finally an implementation section that will say how do we get these programs in place and how to enforce them.
Let me just interrupt, Secretary. I mean, there will be comments council members will make that will just be corrections or pieces of information. There'll be others, maybe not today, but maybe, but certainly as we go forward, where we don't all agree. And when those become clear, we'll have just informal straw votes amongst us to give the staff guidance as they move forward. And then, as Charlie said, when we get the final draft, if there's anything in it anyone disagrees, we'll have the opportunity for formal amendments to reflect changes so that this ends up being a document that reflects the majority and hopefully a sizable majority of us all.
I would also like to remind, one of the things that we're working on as we go on is vocabulary. In the original November draft, there was a lot of inconsistent and vocabulary was used to describe the same things. We're working through that, but we haven't sat down and just said, okay, let's create the vocabulary, because my experience is the more you work with a substance, the better the vocabulary ultimately comes. So you're going to see, for example, we've used the land capability map descriptions in some of the documents that has been historically used. I'm pretty confident that at least the professional consultants are going to recommend some different names and colors on the map. So I just ask you, you're going to see some inconsistency in some of that language. I also want to repeat something that Eileen said earlier, because it's really important. The data sets that we talk about are being used in two ways. One is to create a land use capability map that is the framework for a regional growth guidance system, where and how we ought to be going. The second are a whole series of resource management programs, and they are not driven necessarily by the land use capability map categories, but by the specific resource value, critical habitat, for example, or significant natural areas, or forest resource areas. So there are those map sets, and you're going to, when you see the goals, policies, and objectives, there are distinctions that are clearly drawn between those two mapped resources. Land capability map is one, those specific resources, because many management programs go directly to the specific resource, regardless of which land capability map it's located in. So I just ask for your forbearance as we work through this. We don't have time to do this stuff on a standalone basis, and so it's going to evolve. So I chose not to put things in brackets when they were things that we know we're still working on, because we thought that would be even more confusing. Finally, I want to emphasize something. From my perspective, the last day for input is Thanksgiving. We understand that this is a lot to be thrown at you in a very, we understand better than anybody, I think, how much we're throwing at you at what pace. And it's not, if you get a document on Monday and we have a meeting, we want your input that you can give us, but the door doesn't close. The door is open, and it's invited, please, to be open. Because ultimately, this is your plan. It's not mine or staff's plan. With that, I'll go, unless you have something you want to add.
No, I think you've covered it all.
The first element is, I chose the term regional local community character. The more I look at it, community character is a defining element of the Highlands. It's not really called out in the Act, but the more I talk to people, the more I see, the more I drive the roads, the more I look on the resources, it's how they all come together in a series of communities that are all associated by geography and hydrology and economics and basic geography. So that's the draft. It would be Chapter 3 after the data and analysis. The introductory paragraph is really intended to say this is a mosaic of natural landscapes, of geological and hydrological systems, and human settlements of various character. There's one of the richnesses, the diversity. It's also the shared values of the water resources, of the forests, and the critical habitat extend upon. And what I tried to do was to try to call out some of the objective, or what we have done, and I should say we all, I am not the sole author of this. My role here is to bring things together, then work with your professional staff to then produce something that's our effort, and I will try my best to say that. But it is to identify to somebody who doesn't know the area who hasn't stepped back to think about the area in broad terms in this introduction about what it really is. And some of these numbers are things that I saw that say to me, this is a special area. What are those attributes that are special? And that's what's in this first section. And I really think that this distinctive character, but the set of shared values and the interdependence of the communities in the long-term integrity of the region. What happens in one community affects not only state interests in terms of potable water, but adjacent communities. What happens on a road that connects two communities can have a significant impact on that cherished community character. And at the outset, I want to, as a consultant who's worked in this a lot, preserving or maintaining community character, which has been so vital to the success of this region and why so much of the land is still in such great shape, is very sensitive to change, and it needs to be done organically. There is a theory of growing places that the great places of the world grew organically. The problem with America is we didn't grow organically. We've grown very rapidly, And one of the things that this area reflects is one of the best examples of organic growth, that is, step by step, building on the practices and history of the past, adding to and not taking away, treating it as a resource that we're sustaining, expanding, and building on. That's not a very common perspective in the United States, and I think the region is much better for it. So that's the first part. If there are any comments or questions, I'd be glad to respond, but if you don't, anybody who doesn't indicate, Mr. Chairman, I'll just keep rolling.
Okay. One question, comments at the end. Go ahead. Kurt,
just, do you feel that there's any value in including a bullet point for agriculture in those opening bullet points? It's glossed over in two bullet points, I believe, just mentioning agricultural fields. But I'm wondering if there's value in agriculture is highlighted specifically in the preamble of the Act, if you will. And then there might be value including mentioning the total number of acres or perhaps the amount of acres that are farmland assessed or the number of acres that are permanently preserved and maybe even the total dollar value of agricultural production in the region. Just a thought.
I believe we can and should do that. We've been a little bit, when this was drafted, we were still wrestling with the lands model. I will say that we now, in the last 10 days, we've come a long ways in understanding more clearly the nature of the lands which we've been that are in the conservation zone and what their character is and how all those objective measures you've described fit in. So, yes, I think it's a great idea. We'll do that.
Sound like Fred Thompson up there this morning, by the way.
What?
Fred Thompson up there this morning. You
know, it's just the lack of hair, I'm sure.
I hope that's a good
fit.
Your definition of growing organically in this region and the highlighting of this as a good example in the United States, I think perhaps is something that should also be included in this interview. Unless it's in there and I missed it. Well, I thought your description was not only eloquent but accurate, and I think describes particularly what the people of this region are concerned about. Their sensitivity to change, I think, is accurately described. And I think it might be helpful for those reading this for the first time. And I commend you on the understanding and value of the use of words. The plan previously, the draft iteration, was very technical. A lot of people didn't understand. So when you say, what's it all about, that's exactly the kind of comment that we have received many, many times. And using words that have meanings and implications correctly, I think, will go a long way toward helping people to understand and comprehend this plan. They, in the end, may not agree with it anyway, but they'll be able to rebut in a more literate fashion than they have perhaps in the past, and less technical. I think that's important.
I think we'll do that. There's mention of it in the last bullet, but the definition, the explanation I gave you is deferred, yes. And I think a summary of it would be helpful. The next section is intended to give a very general highlight of the physical geography and character of the landscape. And I called out a couple of things that I think are really significant, and that is the distribution of land that either is or is suitable for critical habitat is a remarkable statistic in any state east of the Mississippi River, and particularly remarkable given the location of New Jersey. I talk about the man-made landscape. It's been used for a long time. That's part of the remarkable character of it is I think about the state of Florida, where I now live. We've been screwing it up for less than 100 years, and we are nowhere as near as intact as the Highlands is and as functional. And, so I try to put it in some context for a reader, particularly somebody who might. By the way, I should point out that my experience with plans is very often they get read by all kinds of people. People who own businesses that are national. They're reading them in Chicago and trying to understand what's happening to my resource. So when I'm involved in preparing something like this, we try to make sure that it's not just somebody who's familiar with New Jersey. In fact, one of the things I found most remarkable about New Jersey is nobody knows outside of New Jersey really knows what New Jersey is. Most people tell me, where are you going today? Well, I'm going to New Jersey. Oh, I'm sorry. And I turn around and tell them, you don't understand.
So that's in there just as a disclosure. I call that what I think are a characterization of the landscapes. In some ways, I have used a different set of words to help you and the reader step back from what you know every day and see it as an outsider sees it. I think that's a helpful experience. And that's what at the end, the description of these number of landscapes is to try to carry. And again, I'm trying to build on it, the diversity. This is not like 800,000 acres of all the same thing. There is 500,000 to 450,000 acres of forest, but that forest is very diverse, and not just in its condition, but also the interrelationship between agriculture. One of the things we've been looking at is the interrelationship between ag lands, rural character, and critical habitat. They're not isolated resources. They are overlapping and interrelated. So that's the geophysical. The next is shared values, and I felt that it was really important to call out that what this is all about are a bunch of things that are shared by various communities. They have different perspectives, different prisms, but shared values. The history of the region, I think, is really important. And history tells us a lot. History, before technology, eliminated things like natural barriers and how to build bridges and how to build buildings, and et cetera. We grew organic, not just to what had been built before, but to the land itself. And so we tried to emphasize in this that we pointed out that although there are these differences, there are common and shared values. And many of those are social and cultural and economic. They're all informed, and I think this is important, by history. Again, a contrast to Florida. We have no history. And so we have no chance to change organically because we're not changing from something to something more, something additional. We're changing to something different. We call out water. It is the defining region, vision, but I try to describe, in this portion of it, we try to describe water in a different way, how it has shaped the past development. It's really great. You have a lot of preserved land because of the importance of water to the state as a whole. Now, while there's some people who have some views about how water is allocated within the state, in fact, it's been the region's been a beneficiary of its use. Lakes have guided development and promoted tourism, promoted use, which depends on the vitality of the resource, not one that depends upon consuming it. That's called out as well. We've talked about water as the underpinning for the natural environment. It is the functional ingredient that guides or maintains the ecological integrity of the region, so we've pointed that out. We've called out in the next the reservoirs and how they serve the region. Those reservoirs, while they are primarily of direct benefit to other parts of the state, they are also a part of the shared attributes, the land that's been preserved as catchment areas, and the character they provide to the visual landscape. There is a sense, I believe, that's important of shared responsibility for the land. We see in the Act, we see in interviews with people we've talked to, we see in the draft document, and a sense of shared responsibility. Everybody has individual and independent, but each of the local governments, each of the interest groups, are all talking about the same set of values. And that is a shared thing, we think, that can be a basis for a long-term management program, and so we've called it out. It's absolutely a critical element of successful programs. My general view of it, I give speeches often in which I say communities that are fighting over their resources and their future usually don't have one. And so the collaborative perspective and balancing of competing interests is a critical element of success. There's some numbers here to just try to call out how significant when you talk about 50,000 acres of land. That's a lot of land. I started to put it in square miles, but left it at just acres, but it's really quite significant. The shared value of preserved open space and borrowed open space, there are significant lands that are undeveloped. most of the land, 70, almost 75% of the land, and that all serves as barred open space for the 25% that has been developed. And it's very important to understand that there is a shared value there. That open space, the preservation of the forest, the preservation of riparian areas, is a part of what, and agricultural areas, is a part of what defines the developed portion. And if you took the developed portions out of the highlands and set them down in northeastern Illinois, it would be a very different place. It's the context and the shared resource of that we see as being a part of it. The next one is the settlement pattern organized around small towns and villages. You'll see all through this document we've pointed out that topography and geology and hydrology, while they sometimes roads don't go very straight very often in the highlands, they play a vital role in basically dividing the region into landscape rooms and communities that have individual identity. Unlike, I moved to Chicago in 1974, and we looked for a community that was on a rail line connected to the loop that didn't had farm fields on four sides. When we left in 1997, the end of 1997, there wasn't a farm field within probably 15 miles of my house. And all of the communities that when I moved there had identities and characters that you recognized now needed city limit lines to let you know where you actually were, because it was become just one landscape of all individual communities. That is something that's really remarkable about your communities. It has the developed portions have relatively ordinary suburban intensities, but they don't have relatively ordinary suburban character. And a part of it is because the historical settlement pattern, which has been maintained helped by the geology and topography.
Is that due to home rule, do you think?
I suspect not. No, I really think as an outsider, I have to tell you, I think that, you know, the best analog to it I can think of is Pittsburgh, which has always been a community of great neighborhoods. And part of the reason is because of the topography and the preservation of those steep slopes and the forested lands, even in an urban context, has created that sense of place naturally. You all have that in such abundance. It's really quite remarkable.
Charles, let me go back to your comment about if a community is arguing about its future, it doesn't have one. I don't know if I got the words right.
That's about it.
I think I know what you mean, but I mean, there's certainly disagreement about the future of this region by people amongst people who live within it. So,
Let me just clarify. When I say arguing, fighting is a better word. There are. It is absolutely essential that there be informed dissent and debate. Absolutely. You don't find common ground without that. But there's a difference between looking for common ground and between fighting for a winner or a loser. Because usually when you do that, everybody loses. That's my
idea. I think farmers and the cowmen should be friends.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Can I just interrupt just for one second to speak to what Charlie was talking about, the unique nature of the communities. As we go around meeting with the different towns, the one thing we hear from every municipality you meet with is, we are unique, and indeed they are, and they have a pride in that uniqueness. But as we work with, for example, like a borough and a township where one is sort of as we call the hole in the donut, what we're aware of now is that there may be a tendency to blur those lines, and those communities don't want that to happen, and it's only through good planning and that coordinated approach that doesn't let one town do something that really is going to damage the other. And it crosses all barriers, from a preservation perspective to an economic vitality as well. And so this kind of a document in trying to attempt to capture that uniqueness, I think speaks to the heart of the communities as we speak to them, and their desire to retain that uniqueness. But they're fighting sort of, the waves are crashing in on them right now, and you see the erosion of that. And what we're trying to do here in terms of this plan, and I think we'll get to that when Charlie gets to the end of this, is what is the vision for the future? And if part of that vision is to protect that unique character that really makes us what we are and gives those communities that pride when they speak to us and tell us, we want you to help us stay what we value in our communities, to retain those core values.
Mr. Chairman, I have a suggestion. I think this really does pull together and explain well the community character and how that's unique and yet shared. I think that's really a creative approach. And the last paragraph on page 7 before you go into the next section on water and the Highlands region, I found that interesting, but I couldn't quite figure out how that related, these statistics. So if you could perhaps add a paragraph after that that explains the significance of the figures in that paragraph discussing how many people per acre in these counties, I think it would be add even more illustration to the point you're trying to get at.
We've also had a conversation about perhaps presenting in a tabular form and then having a narrative explanation. The point was there's a lot of soft, mushy talk about community values. What we're trying to do is to point out that not just on a subjective basis, but on an objective basis, these communities are very different. And even they are not standard, because while they have a gross development intensity, it's very low. Where there is development, it's much more typical of classic suburban development. That's the point, and your
right.
comment is well taken. It's we didn't arrive at that brilliant conclusion until too late to get it to.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You know, one of the things that I don't know that has been covered, and I don't know, it accounts for the difference in the density of population and all, is that areas where it is most dense are the areas where there are also, where the economy is driven, where the jobs are. At some point, maybe this should reflect that fact. Morris County.
In drafting it, I think that, you know, I told you that we tried to assume an unfamiliar reader to make sure we didn't take anything for a grant. But I think the geographic and the geographic character of the individual counties, which are useful reference points, isn't included in this at all, and that might be the way to address that issue.
I was going to wait till later, but since you brought it up, economic analysis, I felt that largely absent from this was a section where it just dives a little bit into, you know, what really stimulates the economy in this area, how much is truly inside and how much is driven by outside. You had a bullet point at the beginning where you said that you felt that constituent communities are largely self-sufficient and freestanding, and I don't know if you're suggesting that people work where they live, and if that's so, that's completely wrong in my opinion. You know, most people in the Highlands don't work here. They work on the peripheries in many instances. But I think that it really is important in terms of when we move on to, we're mandated to talk about the economics, and it's not mentioned here. We need to be talking about transportation, so then we need to be talking about where are the people truly moving to and from. I know that there's a point where you have to draw some lines in an introduction, but I felt that there should have been some little component in here that dove into some numbers at least.
I agree. And honestly, the reason there is so little attention at this point is that portion of the work is relatively late in our work program. We're right now, I'm actually currently working on transportation and the goals, policies, and objectives for transportation and economic vitality is the last piece of the goals, policies, and objectives, and I've been working on that this week after this went out. And my description of how we go back, circle back, that is an area we clearly need to attend to in the final iteration of this document.
Is there a few points? Can we move on to the water part? People make comments and you agree, we can just move on to it.
Okay.
Well, I just want to make one more comment, and that's, I'm not sure that Kurt is right or wrong as to how many people that live in the Highland region also work here. I mean, I would have said I think a lot of them do. But I don't know, and I think that that's something that the plan should somehow.
But I think Kurt's point was that you could read this to imply that people work in this, not just in the Highlands region, but in the specific community in which they live.
Right, and that isn't true, right. But I think that it would be good to look at the entire Highlands region.
We'll work on that, just so everybody understands. The concept of self-sufficiency is that the communities have an identity, and the individual community plays an important part in daily life, as opposed to a classic suburb in which the community is just a geographic reference point. It isn't a functional part of daily life, and that's what we're trying to draw out here. It's not that there's, it's like the big box issue. I mean, there are big boxes in the region, but they haven't totally displaced yet local business and merchants. And part of that is because of this history and tradition and character of the communities. And that is an important part of it. If all your downtowns suddenly become ghost towns, it's going to be a very different region. And that's going to give very different reasons for future investment in a preserved region as opposed to a changing and evolving one. But we'll work on that. The next is a description of the water the water resources. It is something that staff helped us. We felt that there needed to be in everyday terms, everyday words, a description of this water resource. And it's important enough, not just in the context of everything else, but as an independent resource to include this language. And that's what the water in the Highlands region, down to the elements of place, are intended to present is a general description of this vital resource, which is one of the major drivers under the Act. The next provision is a couple of paragraphs on elements of place. While there's a, it is a part of the earlier description, we've called it out because we think it is a vital part of the analytical, the perspective of the region and its values. And so we've tried to give it a separate dignity, and that's why it's called out. I think that the two major points is introducing the concept of mobility. We need to be able to get around, but we can't subordinate community character and the natural resources to being able to drive anywhere we want to anytime in our own car. The resource assessment and regional land use capability is, for all practical purposes, as I said, an outline of what is yet to come. It's a qualitative description of the requirement to assess what the land can support and what the factors are that will determine that. But the process is ongoing, and that's not a piece of work that was previously included in the November draft. We've recognized it as one of the major work parts, and we're going through it. Every day, staff is continuing. I do want to take this opportunity, Mr. Chairman, if I can, to say that the work that's being done on the mapping, the geographic information system, both as a management tool that will be useful and the land use capability map, is a remarkable amount of progress. Remarkable. One of my greatest reservations was the integrity of our mapping system and whether we could use it as an effective tool of management in the future, and I have no doubt today that we've accomplished that and that we've validated everything that we've done. The concerns that have been identified are either being rectified or are fully explained and are supported by the data. Again, calling out these on page 11, in terms of the assessment, these critical elements that are really the drivers that will be used to calibrate that resource assessment when it's completed. But it's not just a matter of the objective measures. It's also how does that overlay on the subjective measures, and it's and this assessment needs to reflect that while you might be able to accommodate in an existing town substantially more development if based on transportation capacity, water, sewer, whatever, if it trashes the community character, we won't have accomplished our objective. So there has to be this trade-off, this balance. And again, all of that guides back towards my concept of what has been the hallmark. A hallmark is this organic growth. And what the plan needs to do, we believe, is not only guide growth, but also promote organic growth, organic to the land and organic to the existing community. And I believe that there's a lot of capacity there, but it's not working at gross level. It's working at a very refined level because it's going to be ultimately neighborhood by neighborhood, parcel by parcel, community by community. There's some additional discussion. There's a discussion about transportation, the subject of on the bottom of 11 and the top of 12 is a subject of, I believe, vital importance to a region like this, and we've tried to articulate it in terms that are meaningful to people. There is a trade-off in life. Transportation is not a fixed matter. We choose to go places. We choose when we go and how we go. Providing us the capacity to do it any way we want involves compromising other important values and resources, character of the community, environmentally sensitive things, whatever. This plan will succeed, I believe, only if there is an appropriate respect for the competing interests in going forward. And so we've tried to articulate that in a way that somebody who hasn't given that thought does. I know this very well. The village I lived in Barrington, Illinois, decided there was just too much congestion in our little downtown. Sometimes you couldn't find a parking spot right away, and so they solved the problem by four-laning Main Street from the outside, and now we don't have a downtown anymore. We tried to put that in terms that people would understand. We tried to point out there's, I think, a lot of misunderstanding about what the November draft really means in terms of future use of land, and we've tried to articulate in this section that, in fact, it varies from parcel to parcel, and also to call out that you can't ignore the exemptions, as you're going to hear later. I mean, that's a reality. So the legislature made a decision when they drew a set of lines, and some of that was to preserve the opportunity for future growth and development under certain criteria that they established. That's a reality, and we've called that out. We've also pointed out that while the preservation area has some very, very common elements, and in fact, we yesterday were working with the lands model, and we were working without the preservation area boundary shown up, and we were looking at critical habitats in the current mapping exercise. Someone asked that we put up the boundary, and I will tell you that the boundary between the preservation area and the planning area was remarkably faithful to the underlying data that we were working with in terms of drawing boundaries of where things are. So that gets us to the vision of the future. I used a trite heading because I couldn't think of a new one. But it's really the concept of whether it's rural by design or beach by design or here highlands by design, it's not going to happen accidentally. We have to all collectively make it happen, and that's what I mean. It's by good design. It's by design that we think forward, we anticipate, and go. We summarized all the kinds of things. We try to boil down something that people can understand, five basic principles. And they're outlined at the bottom of 13 and the top of 14. They're not rocket science. They don't necessarily follow the sections of the Act. What we've tried to do is take the Act and the draft plan and everything we've learned and digest them into what we believe in our experience will be the guiding principles of a successful regional plan here. And that's what we've called out. I think the protection of the resources, restoration, maintenance of fiscal and economic viability are all familiar, ensuring that new growth is organic, compatible, but the one we've really emphasized is the equitable distribution of benefits and burdens. It's a concept that we think is essential to successful planning programs, and that's what this balancing or search for common ground or having informed debate and discussion as opposed to wars or fights is grounded in. We've pointed out the obvious, that is, the landscape doesn't know that it's in a preservation area and in a planning area, but the law does, and we need to recognize that primarily in implementation, not in aspiration, not in recognition of resource values and sensitivities and vulnerabilities, but in how we implement. And that is the matter. This table talks about the sets out region-wide goals and identifies how we believe that we are responding to that with the plan. And then we go to summaries of things that are driven from a statutory framework, and drawing out the distinctions that are in the Act for the preservation of the planning area, but doing it not in simple lines, but with some narrative explanation as to what the implications of that are. And in future land use, we've tried to summarize that in on pages 16 and 17. We've introduced a few concepts in here that are not found in the Act. One is of cumulative community character. That is, one land use doesn't always define community care. It's the cumulative character. You can accommodate a home that has a different characteristic or a business that doesn't fit, but it's when they're a majority of them or a significant number of them don't fit that you start to see changes. We've also suggested that the that while the Act imposes some creates some exemptions, it doesn't mean we can't be creative in offering voluntary alternatives to allow those rights to be expressed in a way that will advance the interests of the Act. And we believe that that's something that provides an opportunity for flexibility, benefits for property owners, and better management for the resource.
Just ask one question about the idea of voluntary compliance. If you could write this in a way that it doesn't imply passivity on the part of either the strategies of the plan. So, for example, if you find a concentration of exempted properties that would severely fragment a forest or affect a watershed, that would be a place that we would actively promote Green Acres acquisition or other approaches to keep that land in its natural state. It's clearly not a regulatory standard in that sense, but I want to make sure we don't. We're not simply going to passively stand back and let the exemptions express themselves at, you know, to the detriment of what we're trying to do.
I'll assure you that at least every conversation I've had with staff and with Lane, we're not contemplating passivity. There's somewhere there is language, and because I'm now working on the next product, that is we talked about the limits of the law and the opportunity for active activism in promoting alternative, and includes things like we know that there's some other state agency regulations that are going to have to be addressed if we're going to maximize those opportunities. And there's language in that this is an opportunity for the property owner, the municipalities, and the council to collaborate on achieving mutually beneficial outcomes, notwithstanding the limitations of the Act.
May I just address one other item? What we have already, what you're working with, is something that is pretty good. The present custodians, stewards of the land over the last several hundred years, essentially have done a decent job of keeping what we have intact. You referred to that. The organic growth, my frivolous allusion to home rule, was not so frivolous in a way. Is there a possibility of commending prior stewards and the current stewards of the land for the good work that they have done? And I think particularly of my county, Morris County, which has done an extraordinarily good job of encouraging land preservation and protecting resources above and beyond what might have been declared by statute. I think that deserves some commendation and some recognition in this document, because it sort of sets the pace and nods in the direction of continuation of good work by people who are working very hard to do that. A lot of those people are in the room here. Some of them are not in the room here, but they've done an extraordinary job, it seems to me. And I would hope that would be recognized in this document, in this particular section, as we move ahead with all the other things that have been identified. I think it would be a lot of good.
Yes, just a suggestion on this section about the goals. On the table, you have at the top the region-wide goals. And then you have, section out the goals specific to the preservation and the planning area. My only concern with this is the flavor of it then tends to focus on the goal specific rather than the region wide. And a suggestion that there be an introductory paragraph that discusses the region wide goals. And one, as an example of what sort of gets lost, is our responsibility to restore water quality and quantity, and restore resources that have been harmed. And it's definitely up there in the big goals, but then when you read through and look at it, you tend to lose focus of that and other important shared goals for both areas. So just a suggestion to flesh that out in an introductory paragraph.
Just there are a number of comments about additional material. One of the things that we've been sensitive to, that a statement like this needs to have some, not be a very long document because people don't read it. But I gather from you all that we could add some additional text to this without going beyond that limit in your judgment.
I'm not talking about here.
Not too much.
I'm talking about the paragraph just to point up. So it doesn't get lost, because
these other five paragraphs are now another page and a half, and we're already over my limit on the number of pages. So
I can rewrite some of what you have here. Keep it brief.
We'll do that. I hope, Councilman, that my remarks intended to be summary haven't overlooked that. As an outsider, I think that it's not an accident that this resource still has its values so largely intact. I've now lost my place.
John, may I make a quick comment? On the table on page 15, under the goals specific to planning area, the bottom goal is balanced transportation system. Is that intended to not be included in the preservation area? Does the Act somewhere state that it's only the planning area that we're seeking transportation?
Yeah,
This is straight from the statute.
Section 10 sets out the separately for preservation and planning. And so what we did was put this in a table format for you, but it's directly from the Act.
It's a very helpful format. Notwithstanding Tracy's comments, it's a very helpful format of the rules of the Act.
So are we going to draw a line, and when the railroad goes into the preservation area, just
disappears,
and we'll put continues on the other tunnel under?
Councilman, I'll assure you that the goals, policies, and objectives, which I have completed a draft of for transportation, don't disappear at the preservation area line.
I've never caught the distinction. I know that there's some other subtle distinction, and that's one that I've just not caught this time. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We then go into some region-wide elements, and this is not intended to be an explication. It's just intended to be. These are the major. We have all these individual things, but these are region-wide elements. Preserving the natural resources, an underlying fundamental. Preserving agriculture. Historic, cultural, and scenic resources, with all due respect, they sort of fell by the wayside in the November draft and need to be called out, and we are working on that as best we can. There are limits, I want to point out, but there's more that can be done. Transportation, we've talked about. We've tried to forecast what's likely to come in the document, and again, it is a vital thing. A vital element, and it's this balancing between the demands for additional capacity. We called out, we do think that there needs to be a focus on two major elements, that transportation improvements should serve the region and its intra-regional movements. That's its long-term health and integrity. And second, it should serve the transportation needs of the Highlands, and that either growth-inducing improvements or improvements that serve other parts of other states or this state need to be very closely scrutinized that they don't have a negative or don't impact the resources we're trying to protect. And how you achieve that is not through regulation, it's through coordination and interagency agreements and bringing together a new way of looking at roads. And we've suggested in the Gold Policy's objectives actually moving away from the ideas of transportation and traffic and talking about mobility. Mobility of goods and services, mobility of people, mobility of freight, et cetera. And so that's what this is intended to refer to. Landowner equity. We've talked about TDRs. It's a big subject and plays a big role under the Act. But again, balancing the burdens and benefits is a critical part of any successful plan.
Just at the bottom there, page 20, where it says the plan proposes, we're talking a little bit about passivity. I think that I would like a much stronger statement there relative to the sharing of burden, landowner equity. I think it's the vision is very well written, but I think we should be more aggressive than that.
I'm a little concerned about taking that too far with all due respect to your interest in this.
Encourage?
Well, the concept that Highlands Water is not just used by Highlands residents, it's used by others as well. That shared responsibility should extend beyond the Highlands region.
I agree with you. I just think that proposing, I think that the rest of it's fine. I think that the adjective proposed,
I think the proposal is there because it's out of the jurisdiction of the council. I mean, it's referencing a water tax or something that would require the legislature.
So it's not bad for me to recommend things like that.
Well, you have endorsed that, though.
Right.
We'll find a legally appropriate aggressive term, lest there be any doubt I think Justice Holmes had some words about a single word and what it can mean. I will tell you that we as outside consultants think that the benefits and burdens beyond the boundaries of the Highlands is absolutely an essential ingredient to long-term success. And I think we've said proposes in this, but in the goals, policies, and objectives, I think the terminology is much more insistent.
It may be the same word that Mr. Tim's concerned about not being passive.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Maybe that whole thing should be stressed more.
It seems to me this section does need to be broader. It needs to speak to you lay out the principle as the sort of the equitable distribution of the benefits and burdens of implementing the plan among all affected interests. Then you speak to one set of affected interests in this. It's the way it's written now, it doesn't recognize both the benefits and the burdens that the receiving areas that receive the water behind us both provide and bear. And I think that that's an important equitable balancing that needs to be in this. The dollars that we're going to return, hopefully, either through TDR or water taxes or the Green Acres program, are contributed to by people throughout the state. The highways and the roads, which are essential infrastructure to the economic viability of the region, are paid for by the people of the state. So that broader sense of this needs to be put into this. The landowner impact question is a subset of that question of equity. And so I'd like to see it recognized much more broadly in this.
Even I'd like to see it stress how many people in outside of the region are receiving their water from the Highlands region.
And that, it may be, Dan, one other thing, it may be a good part to get into Kurt's point about where the job centers are. Wealth moves from the eastern part of the region back into the region on a daily basis because people work in job centers that are not wholly located within the Highlands. So it is not a self-contained region that lives and dies by itself.
there is this interrelationship that needs to be factored into this question of equity.
I just want to make sure that the reference to self-sufficiency is directed in the document so far at communities, not at the region. There's no question that the region is absolutely dependent.
Right, and I don't mean to, I'm not responding so much to that point you're making, but rather to the broader debate we've had about this act and this plan, that how those burdens and benefits play out, I think needs to be comprehensively looked at.
Perhaps when all this is done, we can make recommendations to the legislature, and I think we had said early in the process that we would, when this is finished, have some recommendations to the legislature.
Yes.
Right. And mm-hmm. Maybe that's where that belongs, because it is in the end the legislature that actually do enforce what we're recommending if they choose to do
it. Yeah, I think laying the foundation for that is, you know, accurately recognizing this interrelationship. Mm-hmm. That's the way we vote the consensus to do the tax of our tax rate or whatever else the mechanism we want to propose.
Should the plan somehow reflect that we feel that the legislature should be dealing with this inequity?
Well, I think at some point, either in the plan that we adopt or as a companion document, we'll need to have a list of the legislative changes we think would better implement the plan that we're capable of doing.
I don't want to belabor the proceedings, Mr. Chair, but goals, policies, and objectives clearly include a lot of goals for ensuring this equitable distribution of the costs of implementing the plan, and go into policies and specific objectives in terms of sources of funding, nature of funding, etc. And then in the programs, there are comparable provisions, and then in the implementation. I, although it's only an outline form right now, I will assure you that we're going to recommend a very strong, aggressive program that the Highlands Council will be addressing over time with both state and federal agencies with regard to the long-term funding needs to make this thing a reality, and demonstrating that it's a wise investment in the future. So In the fiscal and economic vitality of the Highlands communities, I've already confessed to Kurt that this is still very much a work in progress, but we have put in here a discussion of some important issues, and that is this region needs to stop considering or not allow others to consider land as a commodity to be converted to short-term profits. We need a long-term sustainable economic investment program, and it's not just us. The rest of the state's going to have to realize, and the federal government's going to have to realize, if you want to, it is the most cost-effective way of preserving the water resources and community character is to contribute to the implementation of this plan instead of coming back in 10 years and buying another 100,000 acres at vastly escalated prices. And that's what this is intended to try to set the stage on. But this is very much a work in progress. And again, there is this the concept of balancing protection. It's essential. Not if we do is preserve the water resource, we will have failed, and that's what we've tried to call out in the last part. Again, I started with telling you all this has been actually. I very much appreciate the input and conversation. It's very informative, and I think it will help us as we go forward, not just on this, but we are genuinely showing you this stuff as we're working on it, and it's not finished. And it won't be finished until the 19th. And to that, I'll close by asking you, if you have further thoughts, please either email them to Tom and he'll forward them to me, or if you and I would very much appreciate that. And it's a short note. Charlie, what about A?
They actually email them to me.
Yes, send them to Eileen. I don't care who gets them. But. We appreciate that very much.
You know, somewhere in the plan, as that gets back to the economics, you know, you hear a lot of communities, while they want to preserve land, they also want to develop gradables, and that all gets back to, and I've always said gradables are debatable in many cases, but they do this because of the way our tax structure is, the property tax, you know, trying to support their schools and things. So at some point in time, or at some point in this plan, we really should talk about that, how this affects land use dramatically. the way we support our schools, for example, has a very large impact on land use.
One of the areas of undertaking that we candidly don't think was addressed enough in the November draft and in some of the background research that was done are those areas. We're going to do everything we can with your staff. We have a lot of background and experience in those subject matters to address it as much as we can. It'll be like transportation. I'm confident there'll be those policies and objectives and programs that address it. They aren't going to be as much as they need to be. There'll be a lot of work in progress, future work that will be required to do it. But I will assure you, council member, that it's not a subject that's going to be left unaddressed. It just may not be. We cannot get to the level of advancement in the time frame that's available. But I believe that what will be included will be meaningful and will help guide future actions, both of this council and others, to go in those directions. There's not a whole lot of data that's been collected about the economy of this region. Unfortunately, in this effort, we are supplementing that right now. I have a planner working on this as we speak, and because I actually absolutely believe it's a vital part.
I think it's important to add into this introductory, this vision part of the document, this idea that the status quo or the traditional approaches to either land use or economic development are not necessarily ones which are going to benefit this region best. And you alluded to a little bit on the transportation question that simply adding capacity or doing congestion management may not be all the answers. You also mentioned earlier, which I thought was the first time I heard this, about the interaction between the landscape and the character of the communities and economics and the vitality of that. You know, the traditional pattern has been to just keep adding shopping centers on the outside of town, right? Mm-hmm. That plays out until you run out of the land. So I think to the extent that the document can introduce new ideas and help us reframe and think of things differently, that would be something I'd like to see you develop a little bit in there. I understand the space constraints, but it's an outside-the-box way of thinking that I don't think is a big part of the conversation publicly right now.
Outside the big box.
Definitely.
In place of the big box. How about that?
Well, thank you for your efforts with this. It's very exciting to see. I just want to talk about the process a little bit. So members of the council and the public, too, who have comments on this should send them to Eileen. I guess I assume marking changes on the text is the easiest thing. At least for the next chapter, what we see and subsequent chapters, what happened here, and I want to see if this is what's going to work in the future, is that the council members received it 10 days or so in advance. A number of us made comments in the first 6 days, I guess.
By the Monday before the meeting.
Monday at noon, say.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were able to incorporate at least some of those comments in a subsequent draft you sent to members Wednesday morning.
Right. We also incorporated more comments from Charlie's team and our team, right. The staff, and then we had to get it. It was a huge task, and I do want to just to give credit to Erin Lynham on our staff because she worked solidly from 9 a.m. till 7 p.m. to make sure we incorporated the comments and had a fluid document. So that's how we did it, but it does require that we get comments at a certain time so that we can do that work to reflect them in the public.
So for members, I mean, if we're moving forward that way, which I think would be good as long as you're able to accommodate that, what it needs for members is that we all have the opportunity to read this. We shouldn't read it between Monday and getting the second draft, basically. If we have time to read it before Monday at noon, we get comments in, that's great, but between Monday noon and whenever, Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday morning, that's going to be incorporating those comments and preparing a subsequent draft, which we'll get in time to read in the 24 hours before the meeting.
But as a member of the council spoke to me yesterday morning and said they had comments, was it too late? It's never too late. We've gotten a lot of comments here today, which we'll work on, and we expect to continue to hear from you, and we will continue to refine in that methodology that Charlie explained, and so we'll keep working, and it's the same for the public, so that they have that opportunity as well to give us their comments.
One thing I want to say, I'd rather have the very rough draft
early on. Right. I think it's easy to forgive that. We know it's being churned out, and I think it's, I think keeping to that and having it rough is better than getting it later.
That's what you're getting. It's a rough draft, let me tell you.
And I'm glad you said that, though, Tracy, because that was our concern, was we're putting stuff out that we're not really comfortable with, but we're very comfortable when we get responses from you, we know where we're going.
Comments on this?
Okay. I just want to make a comment to Charlie. When I left the last meeting early, I was leaving to go to Pittsburgh. I'm a native of Pittsburgh, and I'm always thrilled to go back and see it. It is indeed beautiful because of the landscape and the mountains. It looked wonderful.
But you're not asking for reimbursement for travel.
We've often tried to figure out how we could take a classic sprawling suburb outside of Chicago and what we could put in that would otherwise be ridges or hills that would break them up and give them character. We just haven't figured it out yet.
The Home Depot did take off the top of one of the mountains.
Yeah, well, not everything is perfect.
Let's move on. Thank you very much. We're going to move to talk about contentions now.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I have two documents that I'd like to share with the public for purposes of this part of the meeting. And just to make it clear, I'll start with one document on this side and then and the other on the other. You need to end up with two. The first page is basically just the listing of the 17 exemptions that you can refer back to see what we're talking about. The second is an abstract that talks about the work we've been doing on exemptions, which I'll explain. So if you could pass those out, it would help you follow this discussion.
These are the same documents members have in their packets.
That's correct. And while they're going, while the public are passing those around, just as, you know, as we focus on these different elements at these public meetings, it's critical to know that staff is continuing to work, drill down, and do other work that is very necessary to get us to a good place come November 19th. And the exemptions are a classic case of this. There are 17 exemptions in total. And in order to know, you know, where we're going, we need to know where we are. We need to know what these exemptions mean to the landscape. We need to know how we can use this information to plan for the future. And it gets to some of Tim's comments, and I think this is very critical. We know that these exemptions are protected, that there are vested rights under these exemptions. We accept that. We also see this as an opportunity to plan better, an opportunity to work with the landowners who have these exemptions, and perhaps look at using some of the tools we have, such as the use of TDR, such as the use of preservation, working with our other state agencies. So this information is both critical in moving us forward and critical in utilising good planning techniques and opportunities that arise from these exemptions. The exemptions that we're really dealing with today are exemptions numbers 1, 2, 4 and 5, because they are the ones that we need to really get a handle on and see what they mean to this area. And before I get into it, I want to acknowledge the incredible work of the staff. A lot of units were involved in this, as you can imagine, from legal, planning, GIS, science, and, you know, the administrative staff as well. This has been a sort of a project everybody has had a hand in, and a very complex project. But in particular, I would recognise Jeff LaJava and Nathan, who did a lot of the work to get this to us. And like everything else we're doing, it's like being in a pressure cooker here, because we're trying to make sure that we get information out to you. We're trying to ensure that we're as we realise things that we're missing, that we cover those and we get them done. And so there isn't a day, an hour, and I would say a minute in this office where we're not all flat out. And I'm often asking staff, you know, to never lose sight of the critical elements that we have them working on. And then on top of that, we're saying, but we still need you to do this as well. So, and this is an example of work that's been going on at a heady rate over the last couple of weeks. The exemptions we're particularly speaking of, exemptions 1 and 2 are the exemptions that are on vacant lots that were in existence at the time of the Act. And those two, exemption number one, basically, for landowners that had a vacant lot at that point in time, they are exempt from the Act, from the DEP rules. They have the opportunity to build, and this is on single-family residence home, on those lots. Those are the lots that would be the, by right as if those are zoned as residential. If they're zoned otherwise, they're not as of right, they're going to require some sort of a zoning change. So we have to make that differentiation. Exemption number two is for those landowners that had a lot of record but have sold it. The new landowner has a right to develop a single family residence on that property, but there are some restrictions that go with the new owner's right. It's an acre of disturbance, quarter acre of impervious cover. But those are two exemptions then that we need to see. What does that mean in the planning and preservation area of the Highlands? How many of these lots are there? Where are they located? From a planning perspective, what do we have to do about that or consider? Because this Act was to protect natural resources, and there's a great potential for more development through these exemptions. So how then can we better plan when we know what those exemptions are, where they are, to work with these landowners perhaps, and work with municipalities and counties to see what we can do. Exemptions for...
Quick question.
Sorry.
That's right. Have we determined yet, in terms of the application, especially of exemption one, what happens when it's a lot that's owned by an entity that's not a sole proprietor, when it's an LLC or a corporation or a partnership? How does the individual's own use or immediate family definition fit that type of ownership?
Well, there's two issues going on here. Is we're doing an independent analysis on these exemptions from a regional scale. At the same time, DEP is processing these exemptions and dealing with the day-to-day issues such as that. So we are in need to coordinate DEP on their interpretation of these exemptions because they're actually adjudicating these through their processes. What we said in this abstract that's important to note is that our analysis we're doing on a regional level does not deal with the day-to-day individual technical application of these exemptions. That will continue to happen at DEP. So we had to make certain assumptions that went into this analysis at a regional scale. So DEP, we'll continue to work with DEP on interpretation of the law as it applies, but it really is a case-by-case analysis by them. Many of them are appealing their exemption determinations as a result. So this analysis really couldn't get at that particular interpretation of the law.
So separate from this analysis, we still don't, if somebody calls up 6737 and says, I have a lot pre-existed the Highlands Act, it's in the an ownership entity of an LLC, which we did for estate planning purposes, you know, it's a family-owned LLC.
I can try to get the answer from DEP, but we'd have to ask them to see if that's come up before.
Can we ask? Because I think it's going to come up more and more, actually. I think there's a lot of prudent philosophy in family-owned businesses has been protect yourself as an individual by putting your assets into an LLC or into a corporation, even though it's family-owned.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I just don't have the answer, but we'll follow up with you.
I have a hypothetical question about the first one. Let's say that there were 10 contiguous lots, and these people got together, and they said, rather than sticking one home in each one of them, could we cluster these and put them all together and leave the rest? I mean, Would we be allowed to do that?
Well, that's the purpose of what we're doing here, because if we have the information that we know where these lots are geographically, those are the kind of planning tools we're considering. We don't know yet what the answer to that is, because before we go to that step, we have to know what the on-the-ground situation is. From a regional perspective, we have to know where those lots are, whether that could be a consideration, and that very much depends on literally the location. But that's one of the tools we're considering.
Does the legislation allow it? I
mean, yes, they have a vested right. And if those landowners, if it's a voluntary, they agree to do it a certain way. Now we'd have to work, once again, with the Department of Environmental Protection if we were to offer a different manner of handling those exemptions. But so long as the owner has that right and they're willing to partner in a different form of development, then the next step is to work with Department of Environmental Protection and to make sure it meets the goals of the Act. But we can't look at those options until we know exactly the number of lots, where they're located, that kind of information. Because it's only then that we can say, what can we do now to better manage these? What are the possibilities?
I think it'd be better if you went through the presentation of what's in this document, and then we can get into questions and discussion. If that's okay. Unless you have some other questions.
That's okay. I just wanted to say, I was going to ask something that I can wait to the end.
Okay. Write it down.
Okay. Now I know what I want to say.
Exemption number 4 allows for the reconstruction of any building or structure for any reason within 125% of the footprint of the lawfully existing impervious cover. And exemption number 5 is the one that allows for additions to, again, any single-family home that was in existence on August 10, 2004. So those are the 4 exemptions primarily that we were looking at in this abstract, to bring the information to you. In order to do this, to compile this information, we had to look at Mod 4 data, and we also used our composite zoning that we had in GIS format so that we could do the analysis and figure out what the impact of these exemptions is in the Highlands. To go straight to the results, if you look at page 3, first we'll deal with exemptions numbers 1 and 2. By using the Mod 4 tax data, we were able to reveal that there are 25,918 undeveloped parcels throughout the whole region that have the potential to exercise exemptions numbers 1 and 2. But as I spoke to you earlier about, you have to then look at these and see how many of them currently have the zoning for single-family residences, because that would allow those by right to move forward, so they wouldn't require any kind of zoning changes. And we found out that of those, there are 22,504 parcels throughout the region. And that represents, again, we wanted to look at what does that mean from an acreage perspective. 228,293 acres would be covered, that there'd be some sort of a development opportunity available on that scale of landscape. For purposes then of understanding the size and distribution of those residentially zoned undeveloped parcels, we offered you the table on page 3, which basically shows you, if you look at parcels up to 5 acres, from to 5 acres, between 5 and 10 acres, between 10 and 25, 25 and 50, 50 and 100, and those parcels greater than 100. And the table then sets forth the answers to those on a region-wide basis, and then within the preservation area and within the planning area. So now we really know what's out there, how many of these lots are there. What the impact is then the next part of that study, that we look at these and we'll work on the mapping of them as well, so that we can see geographically where they are and then look to see what resources they impact and how best they could be treated in working with willing landowners. Then if you looked at exemption number 4, this is information is on page 4. Again, these are the buildings that can be reconstructed to 125% of the original lawfully existing footprint. There are 12,108 parcels, and they're classified as Class 4A or 4B or 4C that could utilize this exemption to expand existing structures. And that includes 1,744 parcels in the preservation area, 10,368 parcels in the planning area. And lastly, you have exemption number 5. And throughout the region, there are 233,394 parcels that are developed with a single-family residence on them, and they have the ability to construct additions or other structures under that exemption. And this represents 59,178 single-family homes in the preservation area and 174,184 homes in the planning area.
Can I just ask a point of reference? Mm-hmm. So in that analysis, then, are we suggesting that exemption 4 does not apply to residential development?
In theory, that exemption, you can utilize numerous exemptions for numerous instances. But primarily, a residential development, you can either use exemption 1, 2, or 5. There may be particular circumstances where you want to use the 125% if for particular needs were met by those other three exemptions.
So if we were to then utilize exemption 5 for the single family home owner who wants to put an addition on, there is no limit to the impervious coverage or disturbance that the landowner can do.
For the fifth exception, correct?
So,
well, obviously they have to be in compliance with local.
Total lot coverage, right? Setting aside local ordinances, though, there's nothing stated in the act.
In terms of acreage or impervious, that's correct.
Which is why the single family homeowner wants to go with route number 5, and why everybody else, which is basically the business commercial owner, is going to use number 4.
Correct.
Well, when we're talking about the business and the commercial owners too, we have to consider the 70%, the opportunity to work with us on a redevelopment area that the Highlands Council can designate, so that gives them, so it may be a different result to utilization of that exemption.
Yeah, that's correct. If the 125% wasn't enough for that, the commercial interest to expand, then they would not qualify for the exemption, but they could come to the council for a waiver, the approval of a redevelopment waiver by this council.
I think that's just important to point out. Sorry, you want me to continue, Mr. Chair?
Let her go through it, and then we'll get to questions, because everyone's got questions.
So the final part of this is just to give you an idea then of the implications of this, and I spoke to that at the beginning, but there is an example here that I think is good to use, and that is, if you assume that each property owner with an under exemption number 2, that a property owner with an undeveloped residentially zoned parcel constructed a home on their land, and that would have that acre of disturbance and quarter acre impervious cover restriction, that would result in a minimum disturbance in the Highlands region of 22,554 acres. So it gives you an idea of the enormity of what we're looking at here and its potential effect on the region, and the necessity to A, have the information, and B, then look at how we can plan to address the issues and do better planning and better meet the mandates of the Act and the mission of what we're trying to accomplish here through this plan. That's basically it.
I have a couple of questions then. Why wouldn't that be maximum disturbance? If everyone exercised that exemption?
Well, the tricky part about this one is that exemption 1 has no limitation. And this analysis doesn't identify how many single family owners are going to take their vacant lot and build it for themselves or their family. Mm-hmm. So what we did was, this is a minimum of the assumption of exemption number 2, the table shows that 22,554 is the total for both 1 and 2, so we just assume that the minimal disturbance is that 1 acre or 4 acre impervious. We can't really right now quantify how many people would utilize exemption number 1, but there is no limit on that. So in theory, you can take a 15-acre parcel and build a huge mansion under exemption number 1, as long as it's for your use or for your family member's use.
But on the other hand, in figure 1 on page 3 of the memo, when or in that discussion, when you talk about exemptions 1 and 2, the parcels that could use exemptions 1 and 2 represent 228,000 acres.
That includes the fact
that there are 315 that are more than 100 acres. So you could have 31,000 acres that would have 315 houses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get to such a large number.
That's the total acreage of all those parcels.
Okay. That's indicative of every single parcel that exists without a building.
Vacant.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And are there other exemptions? You looked at 4 exemptions. Was selecting those 4 based on the data that's available, or an assumption that none of the others would have large geographic impacts?
We couldn't do the similar analysis on the others. Exemption number 3 is pretty much it's over now, because you had to have a certain amount of activity.
Well, I'm saying the affordable housing plan one, for example.
Again, we don't have the data
so it might have a significant impact, but you don't have the data.
We don't have the data to do this type of analysis.
Okay. Tracy.
Yeah, I was
wondering when you were discussing, and you discuss it here at the end too, about then looking at these accepted lots and thinking, well, how else can they this be their rights be exercised that would have less impact on our goals and on the plan. And but I can, to use one of Tom's words, I can see where that could get tricky, mm-hmm. because if you start figuring that, okay, those 10 lots that you mentioned, each can build a house, and maybe it'd be better to cluster them in order to protect the resource. Are we still then, they're exempt from the Highlands Act and all of the DEP regulations, but are when they exercise their exempt their exemption, are they going to be exempt as a clustered development, for instance, from the prohibition of the extension of infrastructure?
Well, I think that's the next steps, because what we'd have to do is work out what are the options we want to exercise in addressing the issue. So first of all, there's prioritization of acquisition. If these areas are in areas where there's pristine forest, where there are critical resources that we know should be protected, then perhaps the way to go then is to consider preservation. And have those, we were required to list the properties that, you know, for prioritization for preservation. Same for agriculture through farm preservation. So possibly that's the way to go, and that's sort of an easier one to frankly discuss. The next step might be to consider, again, if it's a group of homes that could be possibly built in an area, to say TDR assembly area. Again, to approach these landowners, speak to them and see if, and the municipality, work on getting a sending area established so that we can take those rights away and protect the land. And then when you talk about the next step, if one was to consider clustering, we're not in a position ready to answer it. First of all, we'd have to, there are certain rights, we'd have to work with DEP, we'd have to consider the impact of it, and they would have to enter into, it would have to be done in a way that we would agree with, Department of Environmental Protection would agree with, and when I say we, I mean the council, shouldn't do this. So we have to work that out and make sure that we were protecting the resources at the same time.
I think you're answering my question somewhat, but I think that this, what for me this says is that these really need to come back to the council, and I assume you're saying that. It would,
absolutely.
And when would it be? Would it be in the discussion of programs as part of the plan? When would this actually come back to us, or is this something down the road?
I think it would be the implementation section of the plan.
Goals, policy, objectives, and implementation, because you have policies that state how you protect resources and how goals, policies, and objectives that will lead you towards TDR and other planning initiatives. So it'll be discussed, I would imagine, under both. But then I also think there will be ongoing work, because there's an opportunity as we find out more and know more into the future in an ever-evolving plan, mm-hmm. to do more with these kind of things.
Well, I think this is a really good piece of work, because I think it really does put in perspective, what we've talked about, the death of the thousand cuts, and the impact of these exemptions, and I think this really does help us to understand the implications. But I think this third area that you're talking about is new. We haven't really thought about that before, and I think we should just flag it for in-depth discussion by the council.
Right, and all I was trying to do is suggest to you that there are ways of looking at this from a planning perspective that may end up in better resource protection. But that absolutely is territory that we have to enter into with you. But I think certainly we could probably all agree on the preservation techniques and TDR as being ones that pretty much you have discussed, because it works with your policies to date and with the programs you've already spoken to. And then there may be other things which I haven't touched on, other opportunities that we may be able to figure out as well as we move forward.
Thank you.
Another hypothetical. A property, a parcel that's zoned commercial, and it's completely vacant. So the implication is that they would have to go and get the zoning change to make it residential. But let me ask you, let's say that as you look at that area, you could say that, some convenience store or a little convenience shopping area might reduce the car movement from the area around it by a tremendous amount, just by having it there, people could walk, all of the smart growth. Is there any way around this? I mean, do we have the ability to make judgments on these exemptions?
In a case like that, I would go back to the 70% impervious cover and say that that's the, if the commercial property owner there was looking at what their opportunities might be into the future, that's something they might consider as coming to work with the staff who would bring it to the council to say that they were looking at if they have a certain amount of impervious cover, this is what they intend to do, and we would work with the council would then send that down to DEP if indeed the council felt that was an appropriate area for that that potential.
But I don't think what we would want to be doing in that case would be having our opinions about that reflected in the plan.
No.
To be subject to the plan, not to be subject to the exemption. I mean, either they qualify for the exemption or they don't. But if they don't qualify for the exemption, then the policies of the plan should apply.
Yeah, they're separate issues, really, because they can exercise the exemption if they go through the process with DEP, and if they're granted the exemption, they get it. But what I'm really answering, Mimi, is I think that it's not if they don't want to exercise, if they feel that they want to do something else, then there's a different avenue for them to explore.
But it can be explored.
It's set forth in the Act, and we're already like setting up procedures.
Yeah, a question on page 3. Is it possible for us to get number of acres broken out versus the lots? In other words, if we look at the 315 lots that are 100 plus, how many acres does that represent? And if we were going to look at encouragement, perhaps it would be better to go for the biggest bang for your buck rather than the smallest. Perhaps we could, I know it's inconceivable, trust local zoning to maybe pick up some of the issues by floor area ratios, setbacks, and impervious coverage, and all of those other things that they've been muddling through for a couple hundred years.
And the answer, Bill, is yes, 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 depending how many questions you answer. The answer is yes. We can get that further analysis to you, and obviously we'll look at the size of the lot is important, but sometimes it's the small, it could be a set of small lots that are going to fragment a pristine environment. Well,
I mean, coming up with recommended zoning verbiage and distributing it to the municipalities and working on that basis with their planning boards may be a very quick and effective way to garner what you want rather than, you know, dealing with things on a minutia basis,
right.
You know, looking for exceptions, saying these are the things that we're looking towards or for, and perhaps it's easier for them to incorporate some of those things without taking away people's rights in terms of the development, but structuring.
And I would like to emphasize, we're never in here talking about taking away people's rights. We're talking about recognizing what their rights are, and then recognizing what opportunities we have to work with them in partnership and with municipalities. So, yes, Bill, in answer to all your questions. But I think the geographic representation of this is going to be... Are you all going to die? The geographic representation of this is going to be critical to you as well. And as I say, that's a work in progress in the office.
John, yes. Exemption number one, when they say the construction of a single family dwelling, does that include all the accessories that go along with that? Swimming pool, tennis court?
Yes, it includes all accessories.
Bowling alley.
As long as it's related to single family use.
Right. So you got one shot. Now, if you put up the home and then 2 years later decide you want a detached garage, You're okay. So it's not a matter of having to think of every conceivable thing you want to do when you first do it.
Well, actually, there's a bunch of issues we've been flagging for DEP in terms of the constituent relationship we've been having with people coming and asking questions, that we've been flagging issues like that for DEP. As these things evolve, there are issues in terms of interpretation that need for us to talk to DEP about, so we've been flagging this for them.
So you're going to include that in your list of DEP answers for our next meeting?
We'll do.
Well, these are the questions we get.
Yes,
sure. People ask all the time.
Kurt, we get these questions when we do the informational meetings as well, and some of the really basic questions which would go to, is there an opportunity just to build a simple addition on a home? So we constantly get them as well.
The next item on the agenda, unless council members have any other comments, is public comment.
We want to do our same. Are we going into closed session still?
I don't think there's any need to go to closed session. We're putting it on the agenda for each meeting in case there's a need to, but I don't know if we need it. So we're not going to go into closed session.
We want to do our lunch plan like we did the last time? Again?
Well, we're earlier, so I suggest that we just go into public comment, and if members want to go grab a sandwich in the back, that's fine. How many people would like to speak? And how many people have not spoken to the council before? Okay, I'll start with you.
I'll be right there.
Hello, I'm Kenneth Reynolds. I'm with the New Jersey Builders Association. And I have two questions I just wanted to ask you. I know you're not supposed to answer, but I just wanted to put it in your minds. The first question I have is, how is the council going to resolve the land use capability map zone disputes with landowners? So how are you going to resolve that when you get your new map out there? Just something to keep in mind, that you're still going to have disputes even with this new land use model. And my second question is regarding the draft RMP comment period, and how is the council going to respond to the draft RMP comments that came in before May? Are you going to have some sort of document with this new draft, with this new plan that's coming out in November? So those are several questions I just wanted to bring to you.
Well, the first one will take us an issue to look at. Are you going to answer the second one? Or, you're talking about the comments that were already submitted on... You can go back.
It's yes, oh, okay.
The comments that were already submitted on the draft plan, on the draft plan.
Yes.
Right. We will have a document that will be part of the final plan whenever the council gets to adopting it. There will be a comment response document.
The comment response document is not actually required by law on this, but we will have that. Other comments?
Okay. Hello, Wilma Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I think there's a lot of really good stuff in this Chapter 3 proposal, and we'll certainly be taking a very close look at it. I had one thought, I have a lot of thoughts, but right at the beginning, I think where the initial description or the introduction should really add into that a description of the water features. I think the water, this is something you see in the highlands, which you don't see, and it's part of the uniqueness. Everywhere you go, you're either driving by a pond, there are 400 and some lakes and ponds in the highlands, or a reservoir, or you're driving alongside a river. It speaks, I think, here about the winding roads. Well, the reason they're winding is because they're going along streams and rivers. And I think since the whole reason for the act was to protect the water, and it is, in fact, you see it, it's visible. I think it needs to be called attention to in the very initial part of this document. Thanks.
Thank you.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Just an observation about the discussion about exemptions. It highlights again the importance of working with towns to have them opt into the regional master plan, because these exemptions, if towns are going to be changing their zoning when they opt in, these exemptions will be affected by that new zoning. I'm assuming that that will be at least of assistance.
Thank you.
David Shope, I have a farm in Lebanon Township. A couple things on exemptions. So just when you think you know what the meaning of the word exemption is, DEP redefines it for you. Exemption number one, the highly touted exemption number one, dies with ownership. It does not run with the land, it runs with ownership. So if when Farmer Jones dies, exemption number one dies, and that's the most valuable of all the exemptions. The way you get a determination as to the exemption that you file for is you fill out a 17-page form and submit it with a fee, either $150 for an improvement less than $100,000 or $750 for a fee over $100,000. You submit this 17-page form, which asks for all kinds of detailed engineering information and so forth, much more onerous than the average planning board application, and you send it to DEP with your fee, and then you wait. That's exemption. That's how the exemption system works in the preservation area. As far as the draft for consideration that was submitted today, I would also like to note that all this organic growth that occurred in the Highlands area that charms everybody occurred before the advent of planning boards or paid professional planners. It happened organically all by itself. Begs the question, do we need them? And I hear terms like unique. I have to wonder if this isn't another word for provincialism. I think it is. Mm-hmm. And when I hear phrases like enhance and restore, it is essentially meaningless because it talks to no standard. It's a vague standard with no meaning. And the last thing I have to comment on is you should all review the legislative debate when you're considering landowner equity. I can recall reading an exchange between Senators McNamara and Smith where McNamara was concerned about landowner equity because the landowners in the Highlands area were going to be basically paying the freight for the rest of the state. This concerned Senator McNamara. Senator Smith assured him that he would show Senator McNamara the money. He said, I will show you the money. Next time you see Senator Smith, ask him where the money is. That is the part of the legislative intent as discussed amongst the senators.
Other comments?
Good afternoon, Monique Purcell, Department of Agriculture. I just want to say that I think the vision statement is really coming along. The language is much more grounded than the previous draft. But I did want to point out just one concern I have in the draft as it stands now, and I've also been submitting some written comments. But on page 16, where we talk about smaller lot development, and we talk about it like it's something that's not a good thing, I think we want to go back and look at that. There's also a reference on page 11 where we're actually talking about clustering being something that would not be sensitive to the rural nature or the historic patterns and things like that, where I think that that's what we want to get back to. Where we do develop in the Highlands, I think we want to do in a more compact center-based form, and I feel like the vision statement itself is actually speaking against it in those two areas. So I'll just bring that to your attention here, and I'll submit written comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Helen Heinrich again from the Farm Bureau. I am gratified to see many of the issues that we commented on have been picked up in this draft. And I think, as Luke said, we're moving along here. I wanted to give you something that about egg tourism. I was glad to see that instead of just recreational use of the lakes and the mountains and so forth, that egg tourism is now included in the vision. And this is a report of a very recent study that
the Ag Statistics Service did that shows that ag tourism, not just in the Highlands, brings in $55 million in revenue for farmers. So it's certainly something that Highlands farmers are going to have to be able to do. And I'm glad to see it in there.
Thank you.
A couple of questions. This is Chapter 3. What's Chapter 1 and Chapter 2? Can you refresh my memory?
Put your questions on the table and we'll answer them either here or elsewhere.
I understand that you all have information by municipality of agriculture as described by farmland assessment applications. I guess we'd like to see maybe more specific economic information which is available on those farms, as Kurt suggested. So you have the information. It would be interesting to see if there are differences between the kind of farming that's going on in the preservation area versus the planting area, and the trends, the direction that we may need to go to make it more viable. And thirdly, the cluster issue, the language, as Monique pointed out, is very ambiguous in different places. And the report on the 20-some thousand lots that could be developed is something that we commented on and been concerned about. I mean, talk about death from a thousand cuts. It's death to agriculture from a thousand cuts. And we strongly would support any kind of alternatives that would encourage that kind of development to be consolidated, maybe in terms of the state plans, policies for new villages and hamlets, or villages and hamlets altogether. I mean, we're not talking about 100-acre, 100-home units, but in terms of the character of the community, there's a lot of possibilities if we all work to make it happen. I'm really surprised that the cluster is not added in the section on landowner equity. We really see that as the number three alternative for farm landowners to capture their equity. And I'd like to ask Charlie to put that into that section, as well as clarifying the language on the clusters. The other two are definitely needed, farmland preservation money. TDR's got to work, but at this point in time, the only thing we know we can do, as you all work with the municipalities, is to make these appropriate clusters possible. And a couple of other minor questions, which how do we get our questions answered if we can't get them answered here, and we have them in our comments?
We're interested in your comments, and if you have questions, if you need to put, say them now, we'll get back to you with an answer, or sometimes you can answer them immediately here.
Because
other people want to comment, and we'll get a chance to do it.
The 50,000 acres of open space, I wonder if that includes farmland preserved acres, or if it's just plain acres for open space. Does anybody know? Well, anyway. And that's about it. We'll look this over and give you some more suggestions, and are continuing to look forward to work together with you on this.
And your first question on what chapters 1 and 2 are, Charlie said what they were at the beginning, but I can't say I remember.
Introduction is 1, and data and analysis is 2.
Well, good afternoon. As I said before, my name is Andy Drysdale. My wife Lois and I live and own farmland at 32 East Fox Chase Road in Chester, New Jersey. We've been trapped in the preservation area since August of 2004. That's over 3 years now. Some of our land is or was in the conservation zone, depending on what happens as we go forward here, I guess. We, along with many others, are victims of environmental extremists who have led politicians, legislators, and the New Jersey DEP to do unnecessary things. Before I read the rest of this, I'd just like to comment on the exemptions. We have a parcel of land that we were in the process of developing into four lots. It would be three 3-acre lots and 1 6.5-acre lot. And we were stopped, and we were told that it couldn't be approved because of the Highlands Act, and this was at a meeting in June of 2004, like a day after the Senate approved this outrageous act, and we had been delayed previously for whatever reasons, I'm not sure. We spent a lot of money on it. Anyway, we're not eligible for any of these exemptions, and certainly don't want to build a huge mansion up there. That's putting a lot of money at risk that we don't even have. Okay, well, anyway, I'll go on and read the rest of this. We are humans and have a total of 18.5 acres of land. If we were salamanders, we might well end up with 72 acres. This is outrageous and ridiculous. As a child growing up on a farm, I used to play along a small stream of water that flowed through the barnyard. The livestock, the cattle, horses, and free-range chickens drank from the stream. In spite of all of this activity, there were frogs there, and if you turned over a stone, quite often you would find a salamander beneath it. These creatures survived very well without buffers and would continue to. Buffers greater than 50 feet, wherever they exist, are certainly not necessary and should be abolished along with many other unnecessary state programs that are eating our assets. Thank you.
Ping Long. I think I heard during this process that our comments to the first draft were going to be responded to, yes. And I haven't seen any sites where the comments were published. Is there a place where we can look at the comments?
Do you have other comments besides that question?
Well, my other comment is I think the word exemption is pretty clear. If it's exempt, it's exempt. And I don't think it's necessary for a person to have to go through the rigmaroles to get the DEP to say exempt. In fact, I wrote a letter to Lisa Jackson several months ago, and they came back with the same thing. If it's exempt, it's exempt. Why do we have to make the little individual owners to spend thousands of dollars and wait years to get an exemption? The rules says it exempt. That's
all. To answer your first question, what the process we're going through now as the council and the staff is essentially responding to the public comments we received on the draft. So when, as Eileen said a few minutes ago, when we put out the final plan, accompanying that will be a summary of the public comments we received and our responses to them, saying we made the change that was suggested, or we didn't, or we disagree, and here's why.
They are, Mr. Chair, available online, the comments on
just
our website.
Just the comments, but not the responses.
But he did ask for the comments available.
Yeah, so the comments themselves are available on the Highlands Council website, but not the responses yet.
I think I'm looking for the
response. Right, I understand.
Sorry.
Other comments?
Chair, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Tom, when the regional master plan is finally adopted, does the exemption authority then become vested in the council?
The exemptions are now processed by DEP only for the preservation area. The planning area exemptions will clearly be processed by the council once it wants to have the DEP do that work for us. And in the long range, I think it would be wise for the council to work closer with DEP on the exemptions. We have delegated that to them up front. So it would be up to the council to determine at that time how best to administer them.
Did you answer my question?
Yeah, I mean, I think
the preservation area.
Preservation area is done by DEP now.
When we
adopt a plan, our recommendation is that the council will administer them in the planning area. In the long term, I think for consistency, I think one should consider whether it should be done by one entity or the other.
But we could potentially take over the
yes.
oversight of exemptions in the preservation area as well.
With DEP's coordination, clearly. With DEP's coordination, we have to coordinate that with DEP. But over time, I think it would be wise that one body administered the exemption.
But the way the law is, why you say coordination, DEP would have to agree.
Well, the law does not say who administers the exemptions. What started out early is this council acknowledged that they had to be processed early and allowed DEP to process them over time.
Brad Campbell said they were getting done for free, and everybody in the audience said, no, they're not, because we're paying
$100. Right.
And they're still paying $100.
And another long-term issue we should look at is whether municipal issuance of exemptions over time, certain exemptions, clearly.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Pfeiffer. I'm Highlands Project Director for ANJEC, the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. Several comments to you today. First of all, I'd like to commend you for taking on the task of delineating exemptions. When we see spatial depiction of those, I think we'll have a much clearer view about what things may be possible or necessary to do. The only thing I would plead is you can probably add military lands to that analysis pretty easily. And there's some substantial military land in the Highlands region. I don't know if that includes things like National Guard armories and things like that. But that's quantifiable, and I think that's accessible. So you could add that. I was very interested in the vision statement. I'm trained as an historian, and there's an old saying, I think it came from Voltaire, that history is a pack of tricks played upon the dead. And how you cast your history depends a great deal on where you are today and where you believe you want to be in the future. Some of the things that are in the vision statement are interesting because they're not quite representative of the history of the region. The first one is that, yes, we have many, many acres of forest. Not one acre of those forests is the original forest. So in some ways, all the forests in the Highlands are cultural artifacts that have been adopted and adapted and used by human beings. If you were to look at forest coverage in 1900, and compare it to forest coverage today, you'd find that there was a lot less forest in 1900. So in some ways, the region is recovering from a natural resources standpoint, and that's a trend that we want to reinforce. If I remember things correctly from looking at soil suitability for forests that's available to you in your soils database, many of the forest acres that exist, at least in the southern highlands, are developed on land that is not particularly well suited for forest. The other land that has been developed or converted to agriculture is the land that is best suited for forest. So if one were to take a look at suitability for forests from a soil standpoint and map it, and compare it to existing forests, one might get a very powerful guidance on where to restore forests in the region. Because the good land for forests is something else at the moment. Charlie mentioned some very interesting things about organic development. A number of years ago, I was privileged to do a survey for the federal government of historic industrial and engineering structures in Warren and Sussex counties. And at that time, we sensed that there were two kinds of development going on in the Highlands from a historic standpoint. The first one being what we might call that organic development, that local-based, local support system. But as soon as the Morris Canal came through, and followed by the railroads, and followed by the state-supported highways, followed by federal highways, that organic pattern began to break down. we have evidence from the late 18th century that stores, for example, at Ralston in Morris County, just west of Mendham, were actively trading with Barbados on a daily basis. So the notion that our communities are largely self-sufficient and freestanding is probably not particularly true. It's probably true with regard to water supply, but on food production, energy, employment, many other metrics, they're not largely freestanding, and they are integrated into an international system. So let's be clear about saying where we are and how we got there before we decide where to go in the islands. But all in all, I had a chance to read it this morning, and I understood it. And that is a great credit. So thank you, and I look forward to wrestling with you for another couple of months.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name's Rick Sparling. I'm a landowner and farmer in the upper portion of the Morris County map, and I do appreciate all your work. It's a great task to get this underway. One of my points is the utilization of my land for a resource locally. I have a great water table in the area that I'm in, and I have access to the infrastructure of the town water system, and would like to have possibly a name or someone to talk to on who would be the best person on your Highlands council here that could direct me with what I need to do on connecting a water resource in the Highlands to a water table or the town water system, okay, to supply that that resource. That's many of the other questions I had were answered already in the exceptions. And
I'd ask that you have an initial phone conversation with Jeff, and then we'll decide, Jeff Kitava here, and then we'll decide how best to respond to the issue.
And the name was Jeff what?
Jeff John. He's right here with
you. Okay, great. The only other thing I would like to address is, the road drainage issues for the county roads. I'm on Berkshire Valley Road, which is County Road 699. And a lot of the road drainage issues, I'd like, if I could get someone again to write a letter that states the Highland is really wants to clean up that part of the road, it would help me in getting the road drainage that now enters my property fixed.
Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, I called.
I'm going to be quick.
Okay.
Merv Haynes, Washington Township, Marsh County. With all due respect to Mr. Piper here, I have to disagree with him on the soil type for forest. I happen to live on Schooley's Mountain. I have the worst soil known to man. It's called rocks. And my acreage is overstocked with trees. So I am taking trees out. So with that, I disagree.
Thank you. When people say they're going to be short, they rarely are, but you aren't.
I won't be that short, but I'll be
short.
Good afternoon, David Pringle. I'm the campaign director for the New Jersey Environmental Federation, and just wanted to make four very brief comments. I've been ably represented the last few meetings by Julia Summers, so I haven't been here since Charlie's come on board, and just wanted to acknowledge and thank the council for hiring him. Only wish that you did it 2 years earlier. We'd all be in a better place now, but thank you, better late than never. Second is On the exemptions, on the last page where you're talking about implications, I would like to suggest they have two options for what to do, how to handle them, an A and a B. I would suggest there should be a third option, which is that there will be some exemptions that nevertheless won't follow A or B. So if A or B are not going to be followed, then the plan needs to be regularly updated to reflect that, so that when that additional growth happens because of an exemption, any impacted resource needs to be corrected in the surrounding area, so that the resource isn't diminished. Taking that further, where there is a development above what the plan calls for in the planning area, that diminishes the resource, especially if it transfers into the preservation area, the plan needs to be corrected to reflect that as well. And then finally, I'd just like to strongly urge the council to figure out a better way than real time to provide documents to the public for these meetings. I understand there's a tremendous amount of pressure on staff to get things done, and documents are changing up until the last minute. But if this is going to be a truly informed public process, the public, not at the same time as the council, but not in real time, also needs to have some access to this information. If the staff is hitting the send button on Wednesday nights or Thursday mornings to the council, they can just as easily have a sign-up list for folks that would like email address and have that information, especially for folks that can't be here and hear the comments real time. Thank you.
Any other public comments? Nobody else wants to speak? Okay, our next, the immediately after this meeting, or are you taking a break, Tim?
We're going to take at 1 o'clock.
Okay, so 1 o'clock and after the Resource Committee meeting. In two weeks, October 4th at 10 o'clock. Council will meet again. Our meeting after that is October 18th, which currently is scheduled for 10 o'clock. That's a conflict for perhaps some members of the council, so Paula will be emailing us all to see whether 10 o'clock or 2 o'clock is better. But for the moment, it stands at 10 o'clock, unless we change anything.
Anybody else?
We'll adjourn.
Motions for the record.
Second. All those in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Oh, they are.